Sahanavavatu, Sahanao Bhunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasrinavaditamastamavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adhikarna 1 Eternality of the Lord's Deity Form Anucheda 29, page 10. The commentary says, binding means to use a rope to encompass, so that the interior object is covered. First, holding the rope in front of an object at a prior point in time. One then surrounds the object at the subsequent point in time. But this could not happen with Krishna. That is explained in the verse. Krishna has no prior and subsequent time, no inside or outside. Right? Because it means time is the element that you're using here. Right? You want to bind something, then you have something that's there in front of it, and then with you're going to surround it.
Yes.
But Krishna, there is no time. So there's no time before him. There's no time after him. So you can't bind him just by time. You know, just by considering time, you can't bind him, let alone his unlimited, you know, aspect. Yeah. That is explained in the verse. Krishna has no prior and subsequent time, no inside or outside. You know, because you're binding him outside, but he has no inside or outside. One must bind an object with something that can pervade that object. But this situation is the opposite, right? Because it has to be able to pervade, but there's not. Krishna pervades everything. Nothing pervades him. So then you can't, by space, you can't bind him, right? So both by time and by space, you can't bind him. But this situation was the opposite. The universe and the rope had a prior and latter time, an inside and outside, whereas Krishna did not. Moreover, since he is non-different from the universe, one cannot bind him. He is the universe. Right? So even you're saying, because the rope is part of the universe, right? And with that, you're going to... But he is the universe, so he is the rope also. So then from that, just from the ingredients, you can't, because that's him. How do you bind him with himself?
It's like when we think we can use our logic to understand the universe.
Yes, yes.
Like being part of.
Yes, that's the thing, is that thinking, how do we... But he is the universe. So that's why it functions, that's why it works. You know, so we're just taking it for granted that everything's working so nicely. You know, and the laws are there and everything. But, you know, and then if you ask, how is that? Oh, it's just by chance. Oh, so that means that you found a cure for this disease by chance. No, they'll say it's science. Right? When it was chance, they just said, well, let's try this. You know, the guy's drinking his coffee, drops up, whoa, check that out, you know. You know, that's how it works, literally. Yeah. Moreover, since he is not different from the universe, one cannot bind him. He is the universe. Thinking the Lord to be human form and her son, she bound him. Right? So because she thought, she is my human form, she is my son, and then with affection, because she wants him to be corrected, then she's able to bind him. But it's due to affection. That's all there is.
Can we say, like, as we surrender, he reciprocates?
Yes, yes. So she's fully surrendered, so he fully reciprocates. So yeah. So that's the point. So we're trying to explain everything by time and space. But Krishna is time and space. He's beyond time and space. He's the source of time and space, so time and space can't bind him. Because he needs time to be able to perform the activity. Mm-hmm. Right? But there's no time prior to him or after him, so you can't bind him. Right? Like that. There's no, and space. He is space. and he's unlimited. So you can't bind him by space, and you can't bind him by ingredients, by the upadana. You know, so that's the whole thing. Is it's you know, technically you can't bind him, but she did because of the affection. Since Krishna is the universe, without the cause, who is Krishna, the effect, the universe, cannot exist. How can he be bound by a rope, which is the small portion of a shakti of the universe? So he creates the universe, and he being the source of it, and he remaining the complete whole after that, that means within the universe there's just a small portion, which is the rope. How would this small portion bind the complete source? Right? A ray of light cannot burn fire. Yashoda thought of Krishna as a human form, Martya Lingam. The intention is this, according to the commentator. How could she bind up something all-pervading? No one can even bind up the universe and Goloka. He had a human form. How can that form be all-pervading? He is Adhokshajam. He is that person whom, sense knowledge, Akshajam, is inferior, Adaha. This means he is beyond all sense knowledge, inconceivable to proof by material perception. Although he has a human form, he is still all-powerful. Some say that because he is beyond material perception, he is invisible, but that is not accepted. Right? Because you're saying, if he's beyond material perception, means beyond the senses, right? Because being a Dhokshaja means sense knowledge is inferior to him. Right? So a Dhokshaja, then he is beyond the sensual knowledge. So therefore we say if he's beyond sensual knowledge, then he must be invisible. Right? But what are we using to come to this conclusion? Our sensual knowledge. Exactly. So that's why you see it's faulty. Right? So it's lack of knowledge. It's just like if the person only sees what's in the mirror and it's disturbing him, then the idea is you get rid of the mirror and that nothingness, then that will be nice. Right? But he doesn't understand as though there's an actual reality that's nice. Not just nothingness is nice. So it's just a lack of knowledge. It's a lack of information. You know, also lack of faith, lack of interest, you know, so many other lacks. But the point is the simple is just they don't have the information. So Prabhupada says poor fund of knowledge. Right? So that's the whole thing. They're not believing that it's there, but the whole point is if the universe is just reflecting this of the spiritual, that energy, right? Because the formal cause is the internal potency. That transforms this external, which is now the effective cause, right? Yes. That makes sense. So then that becomes the difficulty is that you just remove the one and that makes it all right. You know, it's just like, let's say I'm hungry and I eat some food that's not nice. So therefore I decide eating food gives trouble, so if I don't eat any food, then I'll be satisfied. It just won't work. You're still hungry. So they don't know about proper food. Right? They only know the diner across the street. Like that. Yeah? You have a term, greasy spoon?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's another thing. But it's a general thing. It just means they don't wash the spoons nicely. So the spoons are green. It means it's a dirty place. It's not very nice. Yes.
No, this is the nature of the material world. If we have perfect knowledge, perfect things, this is not the material world.
That's there. But even we have doesn't mean that we're means yes, if you have fully perfect, you've realized, then of course you're in the spiritual world. But even having access to, like as sadhakas, we have access to the perfect knowledge. But we're surrendering to some degree, but not a fully, you know, because that's pure devotion. But if we have that intent, then we gradually move in that direction. Right? So that's the whole thing. It's even just the knowledge. It's the devotion. It's the faith. That's the point. It's probably defined in one definition of prema as mature faith. Mm-hmm. So that full, complete, that it's just about Krishna. So
at least now we can work with the intent.
Yes, yes. It means we try to improve the quality of our dedication to the whole process. You know, to Guru and Krishna, like this. Yeah, so this whole thing of he's invisible, that's just, that comes up, oh yeah, that makes sense. But the point is he's beyond making sense. So that's the point, is he's beyond, and you can still see him if he wants. Or he'll be invisible because you're trying to see him with material senses, with no faith, so you can't see him. But if you have that faith, then you can see him.
So defining him as invisible from a materialistic point of view is limiting God, right?
Yes, it'd be limiting. Means he's still within the context of your senses. Like that. But the point is that he's beyond. He's the source of the senses. You know. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the mother is the source of the child, but you can still see the mother. Since he is all powerful, though having a human form, why did his mother not see this? This is because she thought of him as her son, right? So therefore she's not looking at this all powerful aspect. She had natural prema rasa called vatsalya for him. Because of her bliss, she covered the realization of his greatness. Her greatness was her lack of awareness of his powers. So her greatness is not knowing his greatness. This greatness allowed her to bind him with rope. The experience of prema rasa was the cause of his bondage with the rope. Right? So him experiencing this prema rasa, that's what is binding him. It's not that the rope can bind him. You know, but the rope is used as the medium to express her affection for Krishna. And so he's bound by that affection, that prema rasa. Yes?
In Western philosophy, they consider that faith is a subjective factor. And that's why if we see something through their faith, it means that it's inductively by their logic.
By whose logic?
Western philosophers.
Western philosophers, okay.
They consider that if we use faith, it means it's our subjective vision.
Right.
It can't be objective. And that's why they consider that it will be faulty. But according to our philosophy, if we the faith is the permanent part of
yes, it requires deductive. See, because the thing is even they say, it's because of faith, but they have faith in their own philosophy. They have faith that in what they see is actually what it is. They have faith that by through their intelligence and through their mechanics of their philosophy, they can understand things. So that means by their definition, it's totally subjective. So they themselves, using their own senses and philosophy and intelligence, can't be objective. But the point is why is it that objective is the actual position? Why are they defining that objectivity is the actual view of knowledge? You know what I'm saying? Who's come up with that theory? So they're just, with faith, blindly accepting that. Right? Does that make sense? So, let us say, as parent and child, okay, I'm going to look at this objectively. So, because I want to understand what it is that's here, what's going on, what's the dynamics here. So, therefore, I'm going to look at it. Okay, the parent, you know, according to the law and all that, and that mentality is the absolute authority over the child. Right? So whatever they say, that's what happens. Whatever culture they give, whatever understandings they give, whatever clothes, whatever food, they're completely in absolute control of this child. Right? So then, by looking at it, that, and the child is totally dependent upon that. So then, So now, do I actually understand the feelings that they're exchanging by that objective approach? No, you'll never. So the point is they can only understand certain aspects of the impersonal. So a little bit, they can get a vague understanding of the Brahman platform. But beyond that, they can't, because that is they're using objective means generic, means it's not specific. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, how did they come up with that one? That objective is the thing. It's just a term that they can use and throw around, and common people don't really understand. So it makes them look like they're special. You know. But the whole point...
There's a good way to hide that's the objective.
Yeah.
Because it seems objective. Oh, it's not about what I want, or it's not about anyone's feelings, and they use that to feel special.
Yeah.
So it's kind of covered.
Yeah, and to get their agenda done. Because they have very specific agenda. Because if it was just objective, then, you know, as Sariputta and Drutakarma pointed out, the amount of evidence to support their theories about creation and man and evolution and all that is very minimal. There's so much evidence to prove that it's not like that. But they don't take those. So they're really not objective. They're completely subjective according to whoever's the leading, you know, people in their field. Whatever they say, that's the way it is. So, in other words, they subjectively say it's like this, and then everybody has to follow that, and now you call that objective. Because I'm just following his opinion, so I'm objective. But his opinion is subjective. Why did he come up with that? Yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? So, you can say they're not functioning on faith, but they're functioning on this firm conviction to whatever there is. If I say, no, this is like this, then they'll get very upset. It's an actual, you know, feeling that they have. But if they're objective, it's just a matter, okay, that's one way you could look at it and all that. But, you know, what about this? What about that? You know, they're not. They're totally subjective. They just, all it is that they're just, you know, how you say, they've refined secondhand car salesmanship to a more intellectual platform. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? It's just pure nonsense, but they just make it sound good. Like the doctor, he knows nothing about what you have, what's wrong with you. But he'll use these big, big words and this and that, just to say, you know, it's this or that. Oh, it's beyond, I can't do it. Oh, you can't do anything about it and all that. Just all he has to do is say, I don't know. Maybe check with someone else. It's not my area. You'll never hear a doctor say that. They can't. You know? Does that make sense? You know? It's impossible. Because they're false ego. So that's the whole difficulty, is that that's why we say so-called intellectuals. They're smart. We're not saying they're not smart, that they don't have you know, good mechanical faculties of intelligence. We just say that they don't know how to use it. You know, it's just like, let's say you get this, you know, rich 18-year-old kid and he buys himself a Ferrari. We'll say, yeah, it's a nice car and it's a fancy car. But that doesn't mean he's a good driver. Right. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Is they have? We're not saying they're stupid. We're saying they're foolish. You have something. It's just like this: the kid gets his new Ferrari, gets his all his friends get out there, and he gets in the car, right? You know, and that, because it's a Ferrari, so he floors it. And what happens? He doesn't know how to deal with that, and he smashes into something. So do we say he's a fabulous driver? Or do we say he's a fool? You know? So that's the whole thing, is that they have all this intelligence at their utility, but how they use it is just foolish. Does that make sense? That's why we say it. We don't have a problem with people with intelligence. We just have a problem with how they use it and then claim that this is the real use of intelligence. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's kind of like a bohemian and a pair of bongos. You know, does that make sense? You know, they think they're really making some cool music and really, you know, like this. But you know, everybody knows them. You know, it's stupid. But, you know, after a few drinks, it may sound okay. But does that make sense? Jnani means that you understand the position of God and have that respect towards God, that faith in God. That makes them a jnani, right? So that's the whole point, is however anybody comes to Krishna consciousness, doesn't matter if arta artartya jigyasu, because of association with devotees and that, they'll see that relationship with Krishna, they'll progress to jnani stage. So they're grateful and they'll do something. But otherwise, if they don't, they just stay at, you know, they need things from God, or they want to, you know, be in a more peaceful situation, or they just want knowledge. Then the point is how will they move forward? Because that itself is not that devotional. It means they've turned to God, that's good. But they haven't actually, what's to make it progress? You know what I'm saying? Just, oh, Krishna is an order supplier. You know, either in gross things, emotional things, or intellectual things. And so then how they'll move forward. So if they have that appreciation of God and what He's doing for you, even if you're still maintaining those other, that brings you to the point of the jnani. So that means anybody, whatever, however they come, they'll move to that. If you say that I joined as a jnani, but if you say I was looking for the truth, that's a jigyasu. A jnani means they know God and respect God, and they want to know more about God. But it's from the platform of that gratefulness and acting in that capacity. So how would they come like that unless they're born in the family of devotees, or they're some kind of, you know, pious Hindus who have some practice and some understanding? You know what I'm saying? Like that. But the point is, then it's just a matter of how quickly you move to the platform of jnani. Does that make sense? And then from that platform, then you can move to the Madhyama platform.
Putting this category only those people who joined the Krishna consciousness, you can't apply this principle to the Amman religion.
No, they might have that faith in God and try to follow the rules and all that, but it would be someone who you would see that they would be very comfortably following the rules and all that. But the point is will they get beyond that? You know what I'm saying? Because is it about something more than gaining something from the Lord? Right? So they may be very fixed in it and this and that, because the principle is whatever is created, it means the source of something, you're always going to see the qualities in what's created. So bhakti being the original source, you're also going to see it in other forms of faith. Someone takes it up, then they become fixed in that, and then, you know, does that make sense? You know, he's committed to riding his chopper. You know, like that. You know, when he goes, he always wears his colors, even if it's hot out. Does this make sense, sir? So that's the whole point is to say they'll be fixed in this, you know, and they'll have some maturity in that and, you know, stuff like that. But the point is all you get out of it is, okay, a little wind blowing in your hair and that's about it. You know, a little freedom on the road, as long as you're on an American 8-lane highway out in the middle of America where there is no one on the road. But, you know, I don't know that you could, you know, put the soundtrack on in your earphones and, you know, get on your chopper in Los Angeles during rush hour and get the same kind of, like, experience or feeling. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, so it just has that little bit of... Does that make sense?
Yeah. Having a comparison between different schools of philosophy and the contemporary philosophers. Can you say that the six schools of philosophy are at a lower position than the contemporary ones because they being objective because they're based on scriptures, however their conclusion is completely contrary and opposite. So they're not utilizing the knowledge of the scriptures in the real way which has to be done.
Not using knowledge, six schools, Tatooine, and that's what I got out of what you said. We have the six schools of philosophy.
We have the contemporary ones, philosophers.
Okay, contemporary philosophers, okay.
So, the six schools of philosophy, they have been objective because they base it on the scriptures. However, the conclusions are wrong. Therefore, they are at a lower position than the contemporary philosophers. Can we say that?
Can we say that? No. Why would we say that?
Because they arrived at the wrong siddhanta itself. So they are in a more pitiable condition than the contemporary ones. At least these ones are.
No, because the contemporary, they're really out there.
Could we say that contemporary philosophers are using Jalpa, whereas those who misinterpret the Vedas are using Chala? And in that sense, you could look at it as being worse.
No, but why do we need to? We've mentioned that Mayavadis are worse because they're Buddhists who make it look like Buddhism is Vedic. That's why they're worse. But the point is the six schools are agnostic. They're not against God. That's just that they're not into developing a relationship with God. Why would we want to put that in a position worse than those who are straight up front atheists?
All right. There is a story during the time of Shankaracharya. There was a great Jaimini scholar by name Kumarila Bhatta. Sometimes we come across his commentaries.
Yes.
So in his lifetime, then the Buddhist was the prominent sect, so he wanted to understand what is the real Buddhism. So he dressed himself as a Buddhist monk, entered their monastery, and tried to learn their philosophy in order to defeat. Then sometime one scholar, they were like criticizing the Vedas, and he could not take it. So he opposed. Then they found out this guy is something different. So they found out he's actually a Jaimini scholar. They took him on the top of their monastery and threw him down, because if he's alive, then it will be. And when he was about to fall, then he chanted this hymn that if the Vedas are true, let me not be, nothing should happen to me. Nothing happened, but one of his eyes got pierced. Because he said, if the Vedas are true. He didn't say, as the Vedas are true. His whole lifetime, he just was repentant of the fact that he didn't say that.
He didn't say that.
That as the Vedas are true. So, they have this positive aspect of being adherent to the culture and respect for the Vedas and other things.
Yeah, because otherwise, then why would Prabhupada say that you have, let's say, someone's a worshipper of Kali, they're absorbed in that, and then someone else is absorbed in an Abrahamic religion, but the person, worshipper of Kali, is in a better situation because they know the Vedas, they know all these things, so the culture, the religion, everything's in place. That. Because do they say there's no God? So then how is that there? The modern philosophies is just that it's you just don't start there. It's like I think Prabhu was mentioning, and one of the seats of all this is, how do you say it? Sorbonne? Yeah. Then there, one professor mentioned something about possibility of considering even about God, and he was fired. So, how is that better? In other words, you have something where Prabhupada's talking about the Mayavadis, but you don't have to extend that to the others because they're agnostic. They're not against God, but it's not that they're really for God. You know what I'm saying? They're not necessarily as such offensive. It's just that they only see God in the position who's the order supplier. But they understand the Vedas, they're following the culture, they're following the regulations and all that. It's just like this. Let us say, here, we have this Jaimini scholar, right? You know, proper Hindu and this and that. The devotees are in town. There is a possibility that you could do a program at his house. No? Go do kirtan, give lectures, you know, talk on Bhagavad Gita, distribute prasad. He'd be cool. Okay? One of these modern philosophers down at the university, is he going to be cool to have the devotees come over, do kirtan, give lecture, distribute prasad?
Less likely.
Less likely. Yeah. Somebody say? Yeah.
What are the qualifications to develop objectivity?
The proper objectivity means to see things by Krishna's subjectivity. See, subjectivity means we're seeing according to our own limited position.
Yes.
So that's going to be a problem on certain levels of being able to appreciate something that's greater than us.
Yes.
Right? Now, as far as... Yes. So the objective then is something that is used. The difference being is the modern, being the inductive method, they're going to start from their subjectivity and try to bring it to the objectivity. To, you know, go from something specific to something generic. You know, so that's why I say they're impersonal. While the Vedic, you're starting from something objective, but you're trying to bring it to the point where the individual can see it within their own life according to the subjective. How does this apply to my life? How does God consciousness, devotional service apply in my life? I can apply my nature in this way and this way serve Krishna. So it's a deductive method. But that objectivity that we're talking about, so that we don't maintain a vision based on our attachment, but we're able to engage our attachments, then means we have to see by a vision outside of our own. Mm-hmm. So that means then we want to actually have actual, it means there's no use in me giving up my subjectivity for someone else's, as far as the absolute is concerned. Mm-hmm. Right? Some material aspects, someone might have a better subjective position than myself. So then, you know, it might work there, but for the absolute, it's not. So, therefore, if I want to know something on the material platform, I have to appreciate the subjectivity of someone who's actually good at it. So in the same way, as if I want to know the absolute truth, I have to appreciate the subjective understanding of the absolute. Right? And that's the objective, because it applies to everything, since that subjective individual is everything. So, he is the subjective, he is the objective. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that now you take that and now apply that into your life. So they're not even actually analyzing what is subjective, objective, what's deductive and what's... They don't know deductive. They just call it, I've heard from somewhere, and so then I find applying it. So in their mind, the deductive will generally not be as good. Inductive will be the better. You know, you'll use deductive to get started, but once you become more advanced, then you're going to use inductive. Right? Because you have to see it yourself. You know, and we'll say that, but we're taking that as that's the final stage, is seeing it in your position. Well, they start from there. But if you don't have an identity in that position, then they hear from so many places until they do. You know, it's like to become the professor, then you have to have heard from so many places. But once you've heard and put that all together into your dissertation, now it's now your subject opinion. Right? Because now you have a position to work from, a position to function from. And so now with an identity, because you can't function without an identity. So a newer person has no identity in the subject, so they don't know how to function. But now this person's educated themselves, they have an identity. And so now they'll function from that position. Because then they'll say, okay, well, what's your opinion? But opinion means subjective. You know? So it's just a playing with words. The absolute is the absolute. It's not a matter of us trying to understand. Right? You know. Does that make sense? There also, even from another angle, you could take it, the deduction is I take facts that are outside and then I analyze them and try to bring them to some conclusion. But the point is the facts that they're dealing with, how do you define what they actually are? What's their actual position? So I'm still, even though I'm saying it's a deductive method, it's still my definition of these things. Right? While the actual deductive is means you're starting with Krishna, and then you're coming down from there. So then it's absolute deduction. Otherwise, then you all these others, they'll play around with them within the world.
Yes. There is false ego, there is a problem. Is there a false ego?
Yes. Because the false ego means false identity, so that means you have a false definition of how things work, you know, centered around yourself. Because false means it has to be it means you as an individual centric.
Yes.
You may include others within it, you know, just like the professor may include some other great thinkers, but still it's centered around him, and he's only taken from them what he likes from them. He doesn't take everything else. You know, it's just like we say, yes, you know, the African saying, it takes a village to raise a child, like that. Okay, what other things are you taking from Africa?
Diamonds.
Diamonds? Okay, that's good. That's good. Rasta, okay. Yeah. Take some rasta.
Cheap labor,
yeah. Yeah, it depends on the time frame. It was really cheap labor.
You know those common drums?
Yeah. But that's specifically we've taken that one. Yeah,
it's
good. The djembe.
We wouldn't mind giving that back.
Yeah. Some have a theory that they should be given back. Yes. Yes.
So can we say that it's the same, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, that five level of perception?
Yes.
Prakrit.
That's a good point.
Aparoksha, paroksha, adoksha, jaya, and aprakrit.
Yes.
So it depends where we start and how the whole thing develops.
Yes.
If it's prakrit, then it's obviously started from myself.
Yes. You and your senses. Yeah, that's a good point. The levels of consciousness will define how it's worked. But the point of the inductive and deductive, they'll have that on all these levels.
Yes.
You know, it's just like I'm thinking, you know, in the inductive, I want to eat this. Then I walk into the kitchen, open the refrigerator, and I see that, well, maybe we'll have to use the deductive method here. That this is what I have, you know, so, you know, I'm going to end up with, I got jam, I got pickles, and I got mustard. So, yeah, so it's going to be a little more deductive than planned. Yes.
Maharaj, when you see in a Vedic philosophy, nifty-nifty approach, like in first example, that you can't see God because it's beyond itself, is this negative approach in inductive method, or it's a lack, or it's a not complete application of deductive?
means you'll have the levels of consciousness, as Prabhu was pointing out. So that means the highest they could function at there is Vijnanamoy, because they don't actually know what is Anandamoy. Right? And so it means they talk about it and all that, but it's just like people talk about how, you know, if they get this, then they'll be so happy and this and that. They're talking about it as if it's the heavenly planets, but it's not. You know? So yeah. You're going to have that aspect is on how what level of consciousness they can function at. But you're also going to have the aspect is that they've heard from scripture about giving up the material world. So from that, then they're trying to apply it into their position where this is what they're dealing with. And so from that, then they're saying it's not this, it's not this. But defining it's not this has to be from what's given in scriptures. That's why we give that credit to the six schools in that they're starting with scripture. But their understanding of scripture may not be so deep. But as you can see, is when they discuss philosophy, the technical points they make are way beyond what you see anybody else dealing with. Does that make sense? The fineness that they can deal with philosophy in that is so great. So,
it's interesting that in the Taittiriya Upanishad, where it describes the five levels of consciousness.
Okay.
The Brahman, the Vali.
Okay. Yeah.
So the fourth level, which is the Vijnanamaya, then it's called Jiva is the basis, and then it describes all the aspects of it.
Mm.
And then the fifth level, Brahman is the basis, which we discussed in great detail in the Anandamaya Purusha. Mm. Brahman is the basis, but the Anandamaya...
Oh, so this is all in the Purushas.
In the Purushas. So why the Jiva is the basis in the Vijnanamaya is the bliss which we discuss about in the Vijnanamaya stage, which all the other philosophers discuss, it's just the Swarup Shakti manifest in the Jiva. The bliss manifests in the Jiva.
It's not about the Absolute. It's about the experience they'll get from being in touch with the Absolute. Okay, so it's liberation.
Because the Swarup Shakti reflected in Jiva, you know, how it manifests in Maya, how it manifests, it's described in Jiva Dharma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Yeah.
The bliss we are discussing is only about the
Jiva. So it's only up to there. Okay,
in the
yeah.
Fifth level then?
Hmm?
Oh, in the fifth level, the real bliss, who is...
It's bliss? About Krishna's happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Because then Krishna's is the basis. And service to him, his pleasure, through the internal potency will be the basis. What he's saying is that in the Vijnanamaya, it's the Jiva is the basis. So that's why, as a sadhaka, generally we're situated there. We're seeing ourselves and how we connect to the Supreme, like that. And the point is in devotion, so that's why even though we may be on that platform and and others who are in that philosophical, the impersonalists are in that platform, the difference is for them that's the goal. For us it's just a process. So we're simply using that platform because being on the Vijnanamaya platform is a lot better than probably what we were on when we, you know, first walked in the door of the temple. You know.
Few steps.
Yeah, a few steps. Yes.
So in that sense, it will be still inductive because it starts from the living entity and
yes.
then goes up.
So basically you can say Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha will all be inductive. But within that, they'll have that concept of deductive. It's just a matter of, did I start for myself and go out, or did I start from the, you know, when, what's around me and brought it in? You know?
Yes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that in the aparoksha stage, one aspect is inductive and another aspect is deductive. In the half of aparoksha, the deductive aparoksha, the... Then Adokshada and Aprakrit all are deductive.
Mm.
And then...
Oh, but there is half-half.
Half-half.
Yeah, because it's about you, your dharma, what you're getting. And
within that, deductive of deductive is Aprakrita only then.
Mm-hmm. Adokshada. Yes, yes. So there's always be that overlay. So we say the actual deductive would be the Anandamoya, and the fully inductive would be the Pratyaksha, the sensual. And so then you're going to But that's interesting about the Purushas, because then that gives more of a basis of what you're dealing with. What are all the points of knowledge that are there? What, you know, what you're actually working with.
It's interesting, Srila Prabhupada, in the 13th chapter, the purport, he mentions the Purushas, but mostly no one can understand that.
Okay.
And even students ask me, and I was like, what? And I try to explain it, but just it's not enough knowledge to base it on. So it's, but Srila Prabhupada mentions it, so right there.
Yeah, that's far out. In the 13th chapter.
Yeah.
Does it mean that as conditional souls we can't just miss induction as approach? We are
decreasing it until then we're working on the other. But it doesn't. That's the fun part, is in the deductive position, it's not that we lose our individuality. It's just a matter of where you're starting from. You know, because in the one, I start from my own senses, what I observe, and then I come up with something, or I start with the facts that are there, and then I work the other way. So then it's just a matter of, you can say, inductive, deductive, that they both have their validity, you know, as long as it's objective, you know, in this context. But here is that the devotional objectivity means it's about Krishna. So it's what Krishna like, what it means. First is Krishna is the absolute truth. Then Krishna is the Lord of his energies. Then it's about Krishna, the person, what he likes. So you're going to be going through those levels also. Right? Does that make sense? So you're also going to see those stages of development. And then ourselves, and what we're working with, is that devotees would be situated in the Vijnanamaya, but at the same time as they may still have the impurities of the other levels. Like that. You know, so generally as I say, that's how you say, you could say, because you can have all three levels, but you could say as from a Western background, then you have the advantage that, you know, this Manamoy, you don't really have to worry about any previous attachment to that, only the first two. So it reduces down the amount of things you have to deal with, right? No?
True.
Yeah. So, you know, anything to do with authority and rules and regulations, that's automatically thrown out. So then... Yeah.
It's an interesting observation that basically it's two kinds of sangha. And one sangha is that when an individual comes into the sangha, then sangha is just for the individual. But then the other one, more traditional, is that when an individual comes into the sangha, then he is trying to understand what the sangha is all about and trying to adjust himself to the sangha.
Mm. Yes, yes, yes.
And it's among the devotees, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But then the first option, it doesn't have any structure, basically. It's like, because, you know, people join and it becomes nishma.
Well, that's why Prabhupada mentioned, we just had it the other day, he mentioned about they're just hippies.
Oh, yeah.
Hippies is like the perfection of that. Mm-hmm. It's just a group of people doing their own thing. You know, but it's not based on anything together. It's just their community is that they're all tolerant of each other doing their own thing. You know,
and not bothering each other.
Sorry?
And not bothering each other.
Yes, and not bothering each other.
That's the positive
and the negative. Okay, yeah, I tolerate and I don't bother. While the Vedic, you also have the thing is how everyone comes together at the temple and everybody is doing the same activity, but at the same time is they're doing the activity as an individual. You know, so you're offering your own prayers to the deities, your own, like this. So you're always going to have these two aspects. But it's just a matter of whether it's what level of consciousness it's centered at. Is it centered on Krishna or on Dharma, Artha, Kama, or Moksha? Is that, yeah. Nimam virincho na bhavo na shrir apyanga samshraya prasadam lebhire gopi yat yat prapa vimukti dat. Neither Brahma nor Shiva nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Lord, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.9.20. Yeah, he did say it's Udriti. Yeah, so it's a double D and take out the V. Yeah, it means double D. It means you just put one more D in this DD in DH. So it's UDDH. They just take out the V. But the RTTI is the same.
What is this? What is
this? Udriti, it means that it's a quote. You're quoting within. You know, so we're giving it something. It's here is that it's within the context of the one acharya's explanation, but we're giving bringing in a quote, an insert or something to help illuminate within their explanation from another acharya, like that. So that's different from our vritis, which that means we're putting that in, you know, which we may be quoting from someone else, but the point is it's our, you know, yeah. We're trying to explain. Well, udvritis, we're not trying to explain, we're just using how the acharya is explaining it. So, Srila Prabhupada. This is a comparative study between Mother Yashoda and other devotees of the Lord, as stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 5.142. Ekale Ishwara Krishna Arsha Britya. The only supreme master is Krishna, and all others are his servants. Krishna has the transcendental quality of Britya Vasyata, becoming subordinate to his Britya, or servant. Now, although everyone is Britya, and although Krishna has the quality of becoming subordinate to his Britya, the position of Mother Yashoda is the greatest. Lord Brahma is Britya, a servant of Krishna, and he is Adi Kavi, the original creator of this universe. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaveye. Srimad Bhagavatam 111. Nonetheless, even he could not obtain such mercy as Mother Yashoda. As for Lord Shiva, he is the topmost Vaishnava. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. What to speak of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva? The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the Lord's constant companion and service, since she always resides with his body. But even she could not get such mercy. Therefore, Maharaj Parikit was surprised, thinking, what did Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj do in their previous lives by which they got such a great opportunity? The opportunity to be the affectionate father and mother of Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.9.20, purport. Since it is stated that he was like a human child, prakritam yata, and he was also beyond the senses, adhokshajam, he was actually the Lord and not a human form produced by Maya. For something accessible to material logic, one may conclude by seeing something impossible. That it is Maya, an illusion. However, since Krishna by his nature is beyond material conception, it is utterly foolish to say his human form is Maya. That means if something that is within the context of material logic, right, in the senses, and then it's not functioning within that natural laws, then I can say that may be an illusion. That doesn't exist. It's not real. But when you're dealing with something that's beyond material conception, beyond your senses, beyond the power of logic, then you can't say that it's an illusion. It doesn't exist. So then to say that Ishwara is just a manifestation of the mode of goodness, then you're dealing with the unlimited within your limited context, and then trying to give your conclusion based on your limited ability. So, yeah. One can also claim that the Bhadva, fire in the ocean, is illusion, since one usually does not see fire in water. Shruti says, Arvag deva asya visarjane ne nata ko veda yata abhabhuva. The devatas are younger than the Lord. Who then can tell whence he has come into being? Rig Veda 3:54-5. Right, because they're younger than the Lord means they're created by the Lord. The Lord is original, so how can they actually understand their source? It is stated that he who was bound by the ropes was he who has an all-pervading form. The phrases are in apposition. One is equal to the other. Jashoda accomplished her task because of ignorance. Right? Apposition means they're equal, and opposition means they're...
contrary.
Okay. One is equal to the other. Jashoda accomplished her task because of ignorance of his all-pervading nature. His form also exists with limitation, since he is endowed with hands and feet and other organs. Right? Because he is the unlimited, and within the unlimited you have the point of limited. Right? So it's through his own energies then he appears in his natural form. But at the same time, it doesn't mean he is not unlimited. Does that make sense? Yeah, also exists with limitation. Thus, Krishna's form is simultaneously infinite and limited. Right? The conclusion is that Krishna is the abode of hundreds of mutually contrary shaktis. One also sees in this world Mahaushadhi having great shakti, which counteracts the three doshas. Right? So Mahaushadhi is something that the three doshas that's able to balance them. So that's considered a great. Because otherwise, most medicines, you're dealing with one specific one. Like sometimes the doctor says, okay, I'm going to work on the air now, or I'm going to work on the cough, or whatever it is that's the prominent one. Let's say you have a cold, so much mucus, they're going to work on that first. Then when they've worked on that, then the next, then they'll try to get the digestion up, then they'll do all these different things, then to try to make the balance. But Mahaushadhi means that great medicine that is able to balance all three at once. Yeah? His powers are described in Brahma Samhita. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose toes alone, possessing inconceivable powers, are attained only after a billion years by multitudes of sages who discipline the mind and breath. Brahma Samhita 5:34. Srila Madhvacharya quotes from Shruti the following. The Lord is not gross, is not small, is not average size, but is also of average size. He is all-pervading, but not spreading everywhere. He is the beginning with no beginning. He is not the universe and is the universe. He is with qualities and is without qualities. Right? So the person is original, but the point is that that person is unlimited. You know what I'm saying? So the main feature is him as a person. And that person is unlimited. You know, it's just like we say, you have the industrialist, and he is a person. And so as a person, you can deal as a person, he gets everything done, the same time as his potencies pervade his whole industry. Right? It's all going on because he's there. So in other words, the personal is the main. The impersonal is a supporting feature. The Lord is beyond inconceivable and conceivable, is spiritual and material, is fierce and gentle, is courageous and cowardly, is great and small. He is pervading and not pervading. He is fiery and not fiery. He has his face everywhere and nowhere. Nisringa Tapani Upanishad. O Lord, you are without substance, with a huge form. You are not the universe. You are the universe. You exist with contrary qualities because of your powers. Brahma Purana. He's without substance, but he has a huge form. Right? So all these are contradictory. So you see a lot. Notice that the prayers that you'll always see that are there, you know, the demigods and different persons, that these points will always be brought out because they're not like that. So that's one of the things that really sets him apart from everybody else. Yes.
Prabhupada told to one of his disciples that one is considered intelligent when one can reconcile apparent contradictions.
Mm. Mm.
The ability to reconcile apparent contradictions.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's one thing. That's one of the qualities of Narad Muni. The apparent contradictions in Shastras, he can deal with all that. Hmm. Yes?
Some also consider this is the level of Madhyama Adhikari. Because Kanishka can't reconcile that.
Mm.
It's all too much.
Yeah, so, but then that would be is that you have an understanding of that, then you're able to use that. Because that's also the aspect of the Jnana Yoga. Is, you know, knowledge and the detachment. So the knowledge actually becomes what you work with, from. You know, so like that. Well, the neophyte will tend to use more of the karma yoga. But then you'll have that full realization of this with the Uttamadhikari. But the knowledge aspect isn't the prominent for us. It'll be the Rati, like that. So you can see here, she even goes beyond where she doesn't understand these things. You know, in the expression of in her devotion, what you generally see is that the gopis it's less of a that they can see all this at once generally, but it doesn't change, you know, the his position. Like that. So, yes,
it's also obvious what kind of questions devotees ask, because as soon as they see contradiction, they immediately.
Yes.
Just ride on it.
Mm. Yes. And then when you're trying to get, or when you're trying to give an, you're giving an example of something and you're working, they'll find a example that's exactly opposite, that's very extreme.
Yeah.
It always has to be ridiculously extreme.
And then it's either or. There's nothing in between.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you want to have fun, you just ask them, well, I don't quite get it. Can you give another example?
Yeah.
You know, to illustrate, they don't have another example. You know, so
they worked hard and long for that one.
Yeah, yeah. It's always the same. And the fun part is, all the people in that kind of mentality all have that same one.
Yeah, yeah. They generously share it.
Yes.
Also, we were reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu. He really liked that play as Nimai Pandit, but then he gave it up. Or, you know, when he became sadaka, mm-hmm. he gave that up. He didn't do it anymore.
Yes, yes.
He didn't practice
it. Yeah. Well, as you see also with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his astrology and all that, he was the court astrologer for the king of Tripura. That means he had to be good, right? And so, you know, his book, the Surya Siddhanta, to find one, so that they could translate and not. I think they had to find it in London. I think it was in the what do you call that? East India Company Library, because mm-hmm. they collected everything from India. So his work was worthwhile that they collected it. You know, and then from there, then they got from.
I like the way you use the word collected. Instead of stole.
I say half Nelsons can be very useful at times.
We have an udhriti from him.
Sorry?
We have an udhriti from him next.
Oh, okay. You know half Nelson?
No.
It's a wrestling move where you take the arm and put it behind the back and then just lift it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, very convincing.
That's He is telling that you are without substance, that means without ingredients, he is telling.
Just talking about here is that a huge form means you have to have some substance there for there to be a form, but at the same time he has no substance. Like that. So there's no material substance, but at the same time he has a form. He's not the universe, at the same time he is. So they're just showing his surup is the shelter of all these, you know, he said hundreds of inconceivable potency, hundreds of mutually contrary shaktis, because that's the nature of shaktis, right? I offer respects to the Lord whose form is smaller than the smallest particle and holds unlimited universes in his stomach. Vishnu Dharma. So he's smaller than the smallest, but at the same time as unlimited universes are in his stomach. So I mean, it says that's the whole thing. How is it he's smaller than the smallest and then he's so big? Like that. I pervade this whole universe. You know, it's just like Mahavishnu. He's laying down in one quarter of eternity, of the unlimited. And then out of the pores of his body come universes. And universes are very big. Right? So, like that, the biggest, the smallest. And then he enters each universe. Yeah, and then he enters everything in the universe. So, yeah. Yes. I pervade this whole universe by my form. Because if he's not between the atoms, what holds the atoms together? Right? That, yeah. I pervade this whole universe by my form, which is invisible to material eyes. And simultaneously, all entities are within me. But I am not in them. And the living beings are not in me. See my inconceivable power. I maintain them and protect them, but I am not in them. My mind maintains and protects them. Bhagavad Gita 9:4-5. Udvriti. In this connection, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains the following in a lecture at Calcutta. From a lecture by His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur before the assembly composed of many distinguished persons of learning and theistic culture, prominent amongst whom were Mr. Sult Jai. Then what's S.J.?
I don't know.
Some kind of term, like Mr. or something.
Sajjan.
Sajjan, okay. Sajjana Supati Rajan Nag M.A.B.L. of Dhaka. Raja Ketendra De Broy of Bansheria, and Tridandi Swami Sripad Tirtha Maharaj at Bagh Bazar Gaudiya Math, Calcutta, evening 12, 1936. So those days they were quite exact about everything, right?
I put that because the question was asked by the Raja.
Okay, the Raja. Okay, so...
Raja of...
Oh, Raja Ketendra De Broy of Bansheria. Okay, because this would have been 36. So there's, because there were like, I think like almost 1,000 kings in India, you know, ruling, you know, like that at the time. So this is one of them. The Raj. The news about you in newspaper at once presented your appearance before my mind. Prabhupada. Yes. Such association of ideas takes place when one is engaged in serving Sri Vigraha, the deity. And without this, one is likely to be overtaken with nirvisesha ideas. In other words, ideas about the absolute truth as without form, figure, attributes, and activities. We should have full association with the absolute truth. But at present, we are fortunately detached from the same, with the result that we are bringing miseries and troubles upon ourselves by running after finite things with outstretched hands to grasp any and every limited thing, which is far from being the undivided whole or the absolute truth. Such state of affairs will not cease to continue unless and until we take shelter under the holy feet of Bhagavan, who is undivided and infinite. And Sri Vigraha is nothing but direct manifestation of the absolute truth, i.e. Bhagavan, the Raja. But the ideas about the true self of the Bhagavan are different in different sects and communities, some opining that he is invisible, while others of the opinion that he is visible. Prabhupada, yes, but they are mere different perspectives of mental speculation. Such attitude as to accept one idea now and reject it in the next moment is useless and should be avoided. We should relieve ourselves of this and try to directly approach Bhagavan, who is the effigy of the nectar of endless rasa, Akila Rasamrita Murti. But we should not lose sight of the fact that he is transcendental, and so not measurable or perceptible to our gross senses. An effort in that direction, namely to measure him, will bring in varied skeptic views. It is for this reason that the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and the Brahma Samhita says, Ata Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grahyam Indriyahi Sevan Mukhe Hi Jihwadao Swayam Eva Spurat Yadao. So the name who is identical with Krishna is not perceptible to gross senses, but manifests himself. That is articulated.
Meaning is articulated.
Oh, you could say meaning. Yeah. Oh, that is. Okay, meaning. Meaning is articulated of his own accord on the tongue, because I know the one before that he used, viz. Because that's the old one.
Yeah.
That one's more easy. I don't know why they don't use it, but I guess it's one more letter or something. But it's only one period, while the other is two letters, but two periods, so still end up with four.
You gotta wonder what they use all that time they save for.
Yeah, yeah. Meaning is articulated of his own accord on the tongue, meaning in the mouth, of those who are eager to serve him. Brahma Samhita 1.2.109.
Bhakti
Rasamrita Sindhu. Yes. So, so the point is, you try to measure. That the point is that what are you measuring with? Are you measuring with yoga maya or maha maya? So if you measure with maha maya, then you're going to become skeptical. You know, that's what Lord Chaitanya makes the point, is that if you are studying so many different people and so many different views and all these different things, like the academics do, it'll only cause confusion. It'll only cause doubt. That's what it'll do. It won't give you more. I should study more. I'll know more. You'll just get more and more doubtful. Like that. So that's the point. But so unless you measure according to how the acharyas are giving direction, then only you'll understand. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achintya gunasurupam Govindamari Purusham Tamahang Vajami. I worship that original Lord Shyama Sundara, Krishna, who is possessed of inconceivable form and attributes, perceptible to such transcendental eyes only as are painted, and so invigorated, as it were, with the paint of loving service known as bhakti. Brahma Samhita 5.38. Okay, that ends that quote then, huh? Avyakta Murtina means by a form which by its nature is beyond all intelligence. Sukadeva spoke thus. Riti, after describing the perfect nature of the Lord's form that can reconcile all contradictions because of him being beyond all conceivable and inconceivable objects, the next Adikarna describes how the Lord's limited medium size limited medium-sized form is the source of all powers. Sorry. Next to Adhikarna 2. Sorry. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada.